This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nelly. Our guest this week is Kurt Coffey, Vice President of Case IH North America. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta, working with farmers to meet the challenges of the day. Learn more at syngenta-us.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Case IH Kurt Coffey next. At Syngenta, we talk to U.S. farmers and growers every day to hear their concerns and help them meet their challenges. From research and development to create innovative products to digital solutions to reduce water use and create healthy soil. We work hand in hand with America's men and women who feed and power the world. Our highly skilled teams are at the forefront of connecting technology to utilize mobile apps, aerial imagery, and other advances to enable farmers and growers to make smart application and buying decisions for their farms. When our farmers have a successful crop, we all benefit. And Syngenta is proud to work alongside farmers to help them make the best decisions now and the future of their farm. Learn more about Syngenta and our support of the U.S. farmer online at syngenta-us.com. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Machine technology is helping farmers achieve goals of improved sustainability and increased productivity. A limiting factor is price. Kurt Coffey, Vice President of Case IH North America, says new machine sales have been hurt by reduced farm incomes, but producers continue to look for cost-effective avenues to retool their operations.
General ag economy, I would say, is softened, as we saw in Q3, Q4 of last year. So we're planned for a market that's off sequentially year over year. In our guidance on large ag, we've looked in the off 20 to off 30% on large ag industry volume. WASDE came out yesterday and talked about extra support. You know, the net farm income could be up, I think it was 29.5% year over year, which was within 2 points of net farm income records. We're planning to be supporting the downside. So if the market's off in that 20, 25, 30% range, which is the guide we gave in our earnings call, I think there's opportunity for upside if government funding comes through as planned in 2024, if we see a little bit of upside in commodity prices, if we see further softening in input prices, which I just paid my fertilizer bill and it wasn't horrible. So I think it's going to be a difficult sideways market, I would say, from what we saw in Q3, Q4. But we're prepared for that with optimism that maybe there could be some upside later in the year.
You serve both crop farmers and livestock producers. Do you see a differentiation between the two segments and groups?
Yeah, smaller ag, like livestock-sized tractors, hay balers, we're in that, minus 5 to 10 points year over year sequentially in industry volume. Whereas for larger ag, we've called in the off 20 to 30 range, depending on the product category. So There is a bifurcation of how those markets are acting, for sure, as we go into 2025.
So if we're talking to your customers, and of course our conversation is taking place right now in the middle of the National Farm Machinery Show in Louisville, which has a tremendous history and it's a bellwether for the Midwest. What are the things that they're asking you for? What, even in this soft economy, are they looking to you to find to plug into their operations?
People are asking us pointedly how they could optimize their operation, and a lot of those conversations now are going to new class size. So we have our AF10 here, which is a larger combine we launched last year, but this is the full culmination of our next-gen platform. And so there's a lot of interest doing more with, one machine versus two, or I need three machines versus five, because that's a labor shortage problem that we're solving. But also we're hearing a lot of feedback on unlocking value with technology. And so a lot of what we're discussing here is our tech stack. We call it Field Ops, but being able to monitor your operation, monitor your agronomic data, get it to your agronomist. And that's a lot of the conversation now, because you can unlock a lot of value with a small technology investment or an investment you've already made.
So there are producers who would love to buy new paint every year if they could to keep up with technology. But are we at a day and age, especially with the machines that you're selling, that there are add-on products or there are replacement technology products that an existing machine can be brought up to standards without having to purchase new?
Retrofitting a display or a modem for better connectivity so you can actually see telematics data. Retroing high-speed planting into a planter, for instance. I mean, the list is long of things you can do to take an existing platform and bring new technology back into it. Frankly, that's what the discussion we're having with a lot of clients, because I'm a farmer. A lot of our staff, we're farmers. We say we're built by farmers because we are farmers. We're trying to make sure that the customer base realizes we're not just trying to sell them a new tractor every time. In fact, that might not be smart for balance sheet, for dealer health. One of my number one focuses right now is making sure our dealers are healthy as they bring in gently used in a up economy the last couple of years. We have to work through that. So we're very focused on the after sales, the parts, the service, the retro, because that's the full life cycle of what brought Case IH to the dance for over 180 years now.
I would like to believe in Washington that they see a couple of goals. One of those would be sustainability and then productivity. How do you meet the needs of producers who want to accomplish both?
Yeah, to me, it's and, not or. I can give you a very natural answer. I was asked to speak at a Soil and Water Conservation Board meeting in front of a large county in the center of Illinois. And I very simply spoke about how, you know, we run into intersections. And right now we're at the intersection of I want to optimize my productivity, be sustainable financially, but I also need to be sustainable to where my dirt is healthier. I'm increasing organic matter. And it's in better shape for that next generation. And maybe I need to meet a regulation, right? Because there's that need as well. To me, it's an ampersand. Like, it's and. When you look at technology that we have, and we have a lot of technology coming we'll talk about in 2025, but just simple things like end-of-row shutoff for sprayers is a sustainability goal, meeting technology that also allows you to spray less and have better financials. We talked a lot of last week about the prevalence of cover cropping to manage weeds, to manage moisture, to improve organic matter. And so Case IH as a leader in crop production and crop protection is meeting those goals, and we're at that intersection looking at how to enable people to get into more cover cropping. We'll have some more interesting things coming later in the year that I think will be a perfect answer to what you're asking, because that's how we meet the customer, is solving their financial problems but also helping them be more sustainable.
There seems to be some generalities among some in Washington that farmers are using too many chemicals, and they're over-applying and not doing what needs to be done for the soil. They're poisoning the soil, and they're threatening their health. But if I look at the relationship between seed technology, herbicide technology, and the technology of the machines to be able to apply a particular prescription by a farmer, even in small sections of the field, we've come a long way.
I spend a lot of time in Washington, and 100% of the time when I explain what happens at the farm with the technology that we've had since the 90s or early 2000s, 100% of the time a legislator, a policymaker says, oh, okay, I understand. Because there's not one farmer that wants to overapply, possibly overpollute, overspend on a herbicide, insecticide to grow that crop. Instead, they're saying, how do I optimize output, do it sustainably, but do it with less? And that's going to be technology to shut off, to be more specific, to see something and then do an action. So the farmer's green by nature. When we educate on what our technologies have been doing for 20 years, I think a lot of people that aren't from the farm realize that we are a very sustainably focused company and industry, frankly. That's not a company statement. That's the industry.
From those tools where we apply inputs, whether it's nitrogen, whether it's herbicides, insecticides, fungicides, applying the seed to the soil, just how far have they come and how tightly are they managing to optimize production today?
I don't want to say way too much because we have some stuff coming very near term, but real-time VRA, variable rate application, looking at a crop and seeing its health and making a decision based on nitrogen application at that point is something that's clear and present. So we've come so far because you could be going through a field 10, 15, 20 miles an hour and your machine is making adjustments based on the need, the health, or to mitigate, saying this doesn't need to be applied. And so we'll have a lot more coming here pretty soon from Case IH on that, but I don't want to go a lot deeper, but we've moved exponentially from where we were 20 years ago.
What about cellular coverage and broadband coverage across the country?
For sure lacking. Cellular correction helps with RTK, or, you know, guidance, real-time kinematic adjustments for machine operations. In some areas, people are working around that by going satellite. I think the last time we talked, and I'll plead the case, the rural broadband need is so much more than just farmers. It's educational. It's countryside schools. It's the education of that core population base. And so I know we've moved light years since COVID with grants. You know, fiber's getting put everywhere. But we have a real need for rural connectivity, not only broadband in communities, but also better cell correction for RTK application.
Back in the late 80s, I had a conversation with a person named Peter Meyer, who at that time was the head of the Soil Conservation Service with the Department of Agriculture.
Okay.
And he said, Jeff, agriculture is going to change. We're going to put up the plow. We're going to put up the disc. The farmer in the future is going to have an excellent planter, an excellent sprayer, and a combine that harvests much more efficient than we have today. Now we're here. There are those who would like to take away some of that technology, some of the herbicides that are used to allow sustainable minimal till practices. Is this agriculture industry prepared to go back to the agriculture of the 80s, where tillage was the control of weed pests in the field?
Yeah, I'll use the term intersection again, because we're at an intersection of a desire to move a certain direction philosophically based on not using a chemical. But the trade-off would be we would have to go back to the old ways. It's a defining moment on which direction we go. And I think that we can figure out how to strike a balance to where, by mitigating overusage, by using healthier herbicides, pesticides, by improving, you know, you talked about seed varieties and vigor. The intersection of these things allow us to continue to feed 8 billion plus people. But if we think we're going to take away technology, insecticides, and go back to the plow, there are going to be a lot of starving people. So I think it's very important for those that make policy that they figure out how we meet at that intersection. To use the term again, it's an and. We need to have new hybrids. We need to have new varieties. We need to have new insecticides, pesticides that are healthier. We need to use our technology that applies it just where it's needed. But if we think we're going to go back to the old days, we're in a lot of trouble on food security.
Senate Majority Leader Thune and Raphael Warnock have introduced legislation to assist farmers adopting precision technology. Is this a move that Washington could make that would advance the sustainability productivity goals of agriculture?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, last year we were talking a lot about, you know, the Powell Act within Farm Bill, and anytime you can complement or help a farmer, I don't want to say subsidize, but help a farmer, it could be even low, you know, low cost lending. Anytime we can get a farmer to upgrade their technology, which allows them to optimize their operation, to do more with less, to spray smarter, to spray less, to spray only where needed, it's going to help. And so we're very pro support when it comes to investment vehicles within a farm bill or separately for precision technology upgrades.
In Washington, there is a debate and a discussion about the right to repair a machine. Why is this a delicate topic to discuss?
I think that people are making this a side issue and kind of conflating a few things to make it a hot button. I mean, our history is very clear, and I don't blink on this. We've opened up repair schematics, repair manuals. We have access to parts and service, whether from your dealer or e-commerce. And I think 2 years ago in 23, we signed an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding with the Farm Bureau and many of our peers in the industry, saying that we're aspiring that people would be able to repair their machines. And we've lived by that precedent. The electronic service tool a customer can get from us today at a very reasonable price is the exact same tool that a dealer can get. So where it gets noisy is the desire to tamper, to beat emissions. And so it's a right to repair and not a right to tamper. And I think that there's a lot of noise on this movement, but if you go look and you see who is out there actually creating and making businesses with defeat devices, it's been deleted, it's chipped so you have more power and it does this. If there was a little bit of people looking in that direction, you would realize there's a lot more noise there than here, because we are very much investing $1 billion roughly a year in R&D to make sure we meet emissions needs, to make sure they have the right technology, and we want to do that. We're a serious brand, over 180 years, we're publicly traded, we're very serious about it. And so there's a lot of noise here. We've opened the doors, we've been very serious with this MOU and living by it. But there's just still a lot of noise, and I find a lot of times that comes back to, you know, people wanting to defeat or tamper. And frankly, the conversation continues, but it's kind of getting old to me personally.
I recall a conversation with the late Charlie Stenholm of Texas, who said, be careful what you ask for from Washington, you might get it. Are we at a point that while it might benefit some, the overall effort could be damaging for the industry?
I think if there was very good discovery and precedent was looked at across the OEMs, myself and our peers, and saw what we've signed in our memorandum of understanding and went through the experience to get parts, to get schematics, to actually repair and do work on our EST, I think most people would say, wow, they're living in good faith to make sure the customer is able to repair and control their own destiny. I think it's a gap on education or storytelling. And yeah, sometimes you get what you ask for, but I'm happy to have that discussion at any time with anybody that would need to have that discussion, because we're living by our promise.
If we look at all of the inventory that's offered by Case IH, how much of that is produced in North America? How much in the U.S.?
I'm going to be rounding, because I do have substantial imports from other countries, not U.S. Mm-hmm. and Canada. Probably 50 to 65% is domestic. I have a substantial plant in Canada. And then I have a number of low horsepower tractors and other products that come from either Europe or India. So it's probably 50 to 55% U.S., 10-20 Canada, and then the rest would be rest of world.
So does the uncertainty over this new administration and tariffs, does that keep you awake at night?
Cool minds need to prevail. And so what we've been doing, we put in place a daily stand-up when this kind of began. And each day we model from our, we say APV, but our annual purchase volume. If this happens, then this is the impact. And we've been doing that, wargaming that numerically every day. And it changes, it seems, every day. I shouldn't joke about that. I shouldn't chuckle. But we're trying to stay calm when we're ready to make the decision, make the right decision. Most importantly, stick to the covenants and promises that we've made to our customers. Because we're a capital goods company, long lead times, and a lot of people have made commitments for things that they're going to get in July. We got to focus on that and stay calm, but we're very much prepared and, like I said, been being very proactive.
Well, with a plant in Canada and the threat of 25% tariffs coming across the border, I would think that would be a concern.
If I do a Pareto or an 80-20 of our business, it's material, but it's in that, you know, I'll give a wide range, 2 to 8% of our P&L. And so our scale will allow us to smooth those impacts should that happen. But it's part of kind of our pre-planning, and so we're going to take it in stride and deal with it. We have a strategic sourcing program where we're looking at opportunities across the world. And if we would have to make structural adjustments based on the way that we source parts or source products, our CEO said this last week in our earnings call. But I think I use the term a couple of times. We're trying to have a cool head. I don't want to be quick, pedantic, fast mover and not be wise. Companies of our size, it takes us a long time to source a product, to get a product ready to ship through an assembly line, manufacturable. This seven-figure combine sitting here has been in the gestation period for years. We've been launching it for a year. We're industrializing, and it's coming out of the amazing state of Nebraska. But if something crazy changes, it takes us a long time to adjust that. So we need to have cool minds. We have them in the business. Our farmers have cool minds. We need that in our policies.
Tariffs on steel and aluminum, protecting those domestic production compared to imports to the U.S. of those metals.
We saw this, I think, in 17 or 18. At the time, I had the parts and service division, so it was impacting, you know, the parts I buy here and there. I don't know how much this is going to impact our purchase price on an annual purchase position, because we don't import tons and tons of raw steel. But I will tell you that the local markets are going to move as well, and we've seen that. So if there's going to be a tariff on imports, all of a sudden we see domestic moving as well. So my more, I'd say, macro concern is what happens to just procurement price in general. But we obviously want to compete in a free trade environment and be as competitive as we can. It points back to customer value. The best we can land something, design it, produce it to create the right value to where the customer says, I want to buy it, that's where we win. And anything along that value chain that adds cost makes it the value proposition less competitive. So we want to avoid that. And obviously, price increases, whether they're a tariff or a price increase, is difficult to our commerce.
Do machines keep getting bigger, or are they smaller and working in swarms? Do you have more operators, or are they more autonomous?
Well, I think it's a combination of the two. I don't know how much bigger we get, but I think that the machines that still do really heavy work will become more autonomous. So the idea of little swarms the size of this table doing a lot of the really heavy, gritty work, you know, in 20 years is folly, because these machines do very hard work. But to see me sitting in this combine in 10 years and across the field there are three of them following me, or maybe they're a little bit smaller but following me, to your term, swarm, that's certainly on the horizon. I think, you know, we'll first see leader-follower or servant autonomy, to where there's an operator in a machine and the others follow, whether it's doing tillage or planting or whatever, and that would precede full autonomy. But you still have to have the size to do a lot of the work that our machines do.
Artificial intelligence,
yes,
what
sir.
Role has it played so far? And if you look in the windshield and out the telescope, what role does it play?
To me, it's a revolution, kind of like we saw with the Industrial Revolution. I mean, a use case that we've seen, we launched a new tool. It's an AI tech tool that supports our dealers and their service shops. And so basically, it has all of our knowledge, our tech manuals, our service manuals, even our knowledge when you call in and say, 1-800-HELP-ME, and you can't figure something out, and we figured it out, and we put it in, we call it knowledge. It has all of that, and when you go into this tool, just like you would go in ChatGPT and say, I can't figure out how to do this with this filter, it immediately gives you, here's what to do. And the best testimony is somebody that's done it for 20 years saying, hey, you saved my butt. We had a dealer owner or service manager recently say, I've been messing with this. I tried everything. I've been there 2 or 3 hours, couldn't figure it out. I went and got my truck. I got out my phone. I pulled up your tool. And in 5 seconds, it solved my problems. And we have countless of those stories. This AI Tech Assist tool was launched, I'm going to say, 60 days ago. And it's revolutionizing the way that we support the uptime of a farmer. And so that's kind of the other side of technology and the things that we can do with our scale to support a customer's ability to repair. You can't figure it out. We have AI now actually helping solve that problem. And so we want to be part of the solution, not a problem.
What do you need from Washington, or what do you need less of from Washington?
I think the one thing we need is stability and a safety net through the provisions that come with the Farm Bill, which I know we're funded, I think, to September, which by definition, the end of the year. What we need less of, and this is a slippery slope, we don't need less, let's say, regulations, because we don't want to pollute. We don't want to, you know, spray insecticides in the Delmarva. But we need more reasonable, efficient regulatory environment. Farmers are green. We're green. We're here to be a partner. We're here to have the right emissions. But it needs to be the best, or make it simple. And so we need the safety net, because that's what you need when you're a farmer with insurance. But companies need to have the stability and know that the regulatory environment allows them to say, hey, I'm going to keep investing here in the United States.
Well, Kurt Coffey, thank you for taking time in the middle of this National Farm Machinery Show to share ideas with us and talk about the industry of agriculture. Thanks for being here. You know you've been here before. Today you've got the last word.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming out and seeing us. To your listeners, I think it's important that we get, like I said earlier, we get cool heads. We really need to get in place stability longer term beyond September with Farm Bill and other provisions within that to support things like precision investments, which we talked about. But I think that it's just critically important that there's stability. That's the investment thesis when you're buying farmland. That's the investment thesis when you're expanding your existing farm. When we're going to put $200-300 million into a new launch of a new platform, we look long term and we seek stability. And that's what we're looking for all across the United States and Canada. So thanks again for having us. We'll see you next time.
Our thanks to Kurt Coffey, Vice President of Case IH North America, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta, working with farmers to meet the challenges of the day. Learn more at syngenta-us.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.